Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. As a parent, there are few things worse than watching your child struggle in school, either socially or academically. Children who have problems in school due to learning disabilities, physical disabilities, or mental health problems often feel like there is something wrong with them. As they fall further and further behind their peers, they often adopt a sense of frustration, inadequacy, and hopelessness, which only magnifies their sense of failure. Every Alaska child deserves and is entitled to receive appropriate educational services through the public education system. For some kids, however, standard educational approaches are not able to meet their unique needs. Fortunately, resources are available to assist these children and their families so they can achieve their full potential. Parents play a vital role in this process. By becoming familiar with the special education process, learning about the available services, and being aware of your child's rights, you will be able to better advocate for your child's needs and make informed decisions that benefit your child and your family as a whole. Joining me today to discuss elementary special education and individualized education plans, otherwise known as the IEP, are the director and assistant director of early childhood and elementary special education for the Anchorage School District, Lori Ruxdashel and Allison Schmuckel. Welcome to the show. I appreciate both of you for taking the time to join me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. Before we get started on our topic, I want to let folks out there know how we can be reached with your questions or your comments. You can call us locally at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or reach us toll-free anywhere in the state or the country for that matter at our number 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. This is a great chance for anyone who might be concerned about their child's difficulties in school or trying to figure out how to navigate the process to call in and ask the experts anything about special education or IEPs. So I guess let's go ahead and get started. And Lori, maybe you can start us off. How long you been doing this? How'd you get involved? And what exactly your role is with the district?
Hi, thanks for having us. So this is my 17th, 18th year with the school district. I am from Texas originally, always known I wanted to be a teacher. Graduated from Baylor University with a degree in special education and moved up to Anchorage and got my first teaching job. So my entire career has been with the early childhood and elementary special education department. While special education for the Anchorage School District, I've worked in a variety of capacities. And so my current role as director of early childhood and elementary is overseeing implementation for our preschool and elementary special education programs within our elementary schools.
Okay, and so you sent me an email this morning and asked if you could bring your assistant director along. So, and Allison came along to join us. What's your role and how do you support what's happening over the district?
Currently, I just accepted a position as the assistant director in special education, and we're bringing a current program called SBBS, which is School-Based Behavior Support Program. We're combining that with a self-contained day school that was on base, Mount Illiamna Elementary School, bringing those two programs together and expanding it into four neighborhood schools. And I will be overseeing that program and working with the administrators in that building and providing professional development opportunities to the staff in SBBS.
All right, great. I guess to start us off, let's start with the identification process of kids. How are kids identified as having a need for services? And we'll get into a little bit of the layers of the different services. But how does the school district, or is it parents, or how do we find the kids that need that kind of need support services?
Well, it's everyone working together. So it's either parents or community. A lot of times with our preschoolers, we get community agencies that are referring individuals to our early intervention service center. But it's either parents, community agencies, or the school team when they identify that a student might be experiencing a disability. It's not just the presence of a disability, it's a diagnosis or a disability matched with that it's affecting their ability to access the general education classroom or curriculum. We have students who have disabilities but are doing well, so we have different levels of support, and we can talk about that as we go through. But it's definitely a community involvement, parents, community, and educational staff.
All right, so if a parent is worried about their kid's educational performance, and that's sort of how we started this process as parents, was to we noticed that Rylan, who is actually here listening to the program today, she was interested in coming and listening to the program, so she's here as a listening audience. It's great to have her here. But we were concerned about her ability and her challenge with reading, and it was manifested as some anxiety about going to school. And so as parents, we brought that up. And what is the process starting out? Like, what should parents do to initiate a concern if it's not been brought up by the school?
So kind of going with your example, we'll start with the elementary example. So if they're currently in school, we definitely want to work with the school teachers and the support staff that are working with them in the elementary setting. We want to go through that team process to look at, you know, look at the data. How are they progressing? There are various forms of student support teams, SIT teams, SAT teams, in all of our elementary schools, where they identify students that might be struggling. And there's various levels of interventions that teams can do through the general education process, even before a referral is made, to address those identified concerns. So it's working through that team process. If you are a parent of a preschooler that's not in school yet, we have a screening process through our Early Intervention Support Center, which is located at the Education Ed Center. And you can find that information on the website. I know you guys put a link on your website. Yeah. So you can go to ASD or through your link. But we are happy. We do screening and evaluations of those students that are preschool age, so 3-4, pre-5-year-olds. And then also, if you're a homeschool parent or you're in the community and you have some concerns, you can also access those services through your neighborhood school. So if you're homeschooling and you have a concern, you can set up an appointment with a team at your neighborhood school, and we can help you kind of parcel out, you know, what should be expected, are there concerns, and do we need to move forward with an evaluation?
Okay, you mentioned two things, and maybe Allison, you can answer this. The SIT team and the SAT team, can you explain for our listeners what exactly that means?
Yeah, those are two teams that run through a pre-referral process. And the pre-referral process is when a parent or a teacher will bring to the school, that specific team, what academic or social behavioral concern they might have for their child. And then within that group of people, they'll discuss the data that has been collected, or if there hasn't been any data collected, what type of data would be best so that we can look at the progress of the student, and then also come up with accommodations that can possibly help the child access the general ed curriculum. And that pre-referral process helps slow down and not jump right to special ed services. But if for a period of time they've tried those interventions and those accommodations, then the pre-referral team will refer us to special ed, and then we'll go through a separate process. So we really look at the general ed curriculum and look at all the different accommodations that we have available for students.
Okay. We're talking about some different layers of mm-hmm. services. So people kind of understand, if they get their kid involved in this process, what are the different layers that they can expect to go through before you can even get to an IEP? Before I started all of this, I didn't realize. I thought you just went in, sat down, and you said, my kid's having some problems in reading or math mm-hmm. or I guess behavioral, there's behavioral mm-hmm. IEPs as well, but I thought you just go straight to the IEP thing. But can you talk about the different layers and what the criteria are for each of those?
For sure. And that's where we want to really try to help explain that there is a variety of general education interventions that can happen prior to an evaluation, that it's not just, you know, in the box teaching in the classroom and then special education, that we as a district have been working very diligently to implement a variety of interventions, both on the academic side of the house, but also behavioral interventions. We've been working with schools and, you know, for example, with Dr. Sharon Azar, who's been working with our schools and doing a lot of master scheduling so that we can schedule school-wide intervention blocks so that children can receive those interventions and also acceleration if needed, that we do that differentiation of the general education curriculum before you just say, here's one, and then jump all the way to special ed. So there are those levels. So if you're a parent and you're hearing a team say, well, we have to go through some of these interventions, definitely there are times where, I mean, we need to provide those interventions to say, we can meet their need prior to a special education evaluation and hope that they make those gains and work towards that. If we see that they need that in the long run or if it's not really helping them, then we want to shift gears. And that's when you kind of move towards a special education evaluation.
And one of the initiatives that Anchorage School District implements is RTI, Response to Intervention, or MTSS, which is what Lori is referring to as looking at those intervention blocks that should be in place for all students. And then after a period of time, if there's still some struggles, then it will go to that pre-referral process. There's a general ed process called a 504 plan, where that is a list of different accommodations that students can access. And so there is a lot of preliminary work before going into special ed that you're right, I don't think a lot of families are aware of that type of supports that general ed has in place.
Because what happened with us is we never got to the 504 spot. What happened was is they wanted to do some in-school, like, first-level interventions where there were some pullouts mm-hmm. for reading assistance, since reading was our thing. And then they measured the change or the success of that intervention. And I guess that's the first. So what are the measurements for that? Who determines whether it's working or not working?
Well, it's a team decision, and it's looking at if it is working. The question is it working? And then you can fade those supports away and then kind of blend back into the general education curriculum. Or if it's working, do they need to maintain that level of intervention or additional support longer term? And that's when you really look at if it is going to need to be longer term, then you're looking at more of a plan to support it. So whether it be a 504 or an IEP.
And there's a lot of different informative assessments and formal assessments that teachers are trained in and counselors so that they can track that data and look at the student's progress.
Because in our case, again, it was, and I'll keep talking about this since I just went through it, and it was really helpful and kind of was the, you know, the impetus of for this show was that we went through it, and it was really confusing and mm-hmm. like, why don't we go straight here? But they measured her reading ability, which like dramatically improved at a very rapid rate. And it was an Ames Web. It was just a standardized test. So that's just a snapshot.
Correct.
So I assume you're looking at more than just those scores.
Right. There's a variety of data depending on what we're looking at for individual students. There's a variety of data that we can look at that we would evaluate with the team.
In their set curriculum, there's core curriculum that we use and then supplemental curriculum as well. So if it is, in this instance, reading, then we would look at the supplemental reading curriculum and implement that for a period of time.
All right. Now, I assume I shouldn't assume, but the school district, it's more expensive to do a 504 and an IEP. There's more people involved. There's a significant amount of person power and time that's put into that. So obviously you want to address those things with the minimal amount of intervention as possible, correct?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, I want to help differentiate between a 504 and an IEP. A 504 is a plan that's written out by the team about what accommodations a student is requiring and how that's happening in the classroom. It's when you get to modifications that you're looking at an IEP. And with an IEP comes a higher level of federal funding and staff support that go with that. But also, as a district, we are working, like Allison was saying, with the MTSS supports that we are working on that differentiation coming out of general education from the beginning. So general education implementation, differentiation, implementation of interventions, and then if needed, a 504 for those accommodations or an evaluation and eligibility for special education. And that's where when I hear you say that as a parent, that it was confusing and overwhelming, I mean, that's valid. I've been in the field for 18 years and it's a language I speak all the time and it's still confusing. So we want to encourage families that we have people in the school district that can join you in that conversation and help kind of navigate the waters. So
who are those people?
Well, it's the team at the school.
Okay.
But then also we have special education department chairs that help support those programs. And those are experienced teachers that can help spend that time with families and do a little bit more, support, explanation, and navigation. We do have a STEP Center, which is student, teachers, and parents. And we collaborate with community agencies like Stone Soup, and we want to provide those trainings for families that are kind of learning or navigating as they go through.
Okay, for anyone who might be tuning in late today, my guests today are the director and the assistant director of early childhood and elementary special education for the Anchorage School District, Lori Ruckstachel and Allison Schmuckel. On today's program, we're discussing how special education programs work and how to navigate the IEP or the individualized education plan process. You can reach us with your questions or comments at our local phone number, that's 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, or the last way to reach us is to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, you mentioned something, Lori, right before I did the little, commercial break. Modifications versus adaptations. You mentioned the 504 has accommodations, I guess that was the word, and then modifications. What is the difference?
So the difference between accommodations and modifications is really looking at, are you ultimately changing what you're asking of the student? And so, you know, an accommodation might just be what tools are necessary for you to access what's being taught in the classroom.
Extra time on a test or
yes,
a calculator.
Yes.
That sort of thing.
So
okay.
Tools, larger print, extra time, a calculator, like what you said. Modifications is, you know, let's say you have a spelling list that identifies three different spelling rules. A modification would be, well, maybe my spelling list just has one identified. And so it takes away some of the complexity. And so that's really where special education is coming in and really looking at how do we modify the environment so that you have a higher, higher success to move you on that continuum.
All right. So another question that comes up a lot is the question of testing. And that's a big one because testing is expensive and a lot of people don't have the resources to go out and privately get testing. Does the school district have the responsibility to provide psychological testing if parents want it, or are there certain criteria that have to be met? And then what's the timeline for the school district to do that?
Well, I think that we all want to be responsible with our funds. And so I think that when we say, well, if we just want it, I think the question is the team identifying that there is a suspected disability? So we want to look at, number one, are there interventions that can meet the needs of the student even prior to an evaluation? We don't want to just test students. But if there is a suspected disability, then yes, we do, as a public educational agency and entity, have the responsibility to go through that evaluation process.
Okay, well, I guess in our case, we went ahead and jumped ahead of the process, and that's something that people with resources can do. But what if there's a disagreement? Parents really want it, and the school district says, no, let us try these other things. And the parents are saying, we've been waiting for, you know, and we're really concerned. How is that decided on or navigated?
Well, definitely we want to not be on opposite sides of the table. We want to be collaborative, and we want to be working with families. So I think that ultimately we would say, if there was a concern, can the needs of the student be met through those interventions? But if we felt like we needed to, or if there was any sort of question, I think we would move forward with an evaluation and say, does the student qualify or not? And then also, like you said, if there are families that have gone out and done an evaluation on their own, it is our obligation and responsibility to review, consider as a team, any of those private evaluations. So if you were to bring those into the team, we would want to get a copy of that and to sit down and review it and say, based on this information, what do we need to do with it?
All right. Start to finish, how long does it take to get to set up testing, and is there a waiting list? I mean, if you got a 9-month school year and you know, parents are anxious to get this going, how long from we have a problem to an IEP?
Well, I definitely want to encourage, even being a parent myself of a student in the Anchorage School District, I think, you know, a lot of times we want to encourage you to be the advocate for your child. And if you have a concern, it is to bring it up to the teacher. You don't necessarily need to wait for them to say something. So have those conversations with your teacher, with the principal, with the staff at the school, and ask them, can we set up a meeting and move through that process? And so a lot of times when I get involved, you know, parents are saying that they feel like it's taken too long, but we want to encourage families to let us know from the beginning when you have those conversations. When we move to an evaluation and we sign consent for an evaluation, we do have a timeline that starts clicking.
Okay, ticking. There's a clock.
There is a clock that runs. And so we have the obligation to move through that timeline and work with you. Even so much so that when we get to the end of the year, we definitely want to address it in a timely fashion, but we're also working through the summer as well. When you said, is there a wait list? Really, the only time we run into anything like that is in our preschool, early childhood, where we have families that are coming into our early intervention service center, and that we're constantly problem solving to try to get families in faster for screening and for evaluation that are not currently in a school setting.
All right. Can you talk a little bit about the early intervention center? That's something new to me. So you're not waiting until third, fourth, fifth grade.
Right.
How are those kids identified, and what's the process there?
So we have our Early Intervention Service Center that's located at the Education Ed Center on the corner of Boniface and Northern Lights. And there's really two components. One is our transition from Part C to B. So those are families that have been working through PIC or any sort of agency from birth to three.
What's PIC?
Our state agency, Parents, Infants, and Children.
Okay.
And so our responsibility is that for those families that have been receiving services from birth to three, that we have them transitioned into the educational system by their third birthday. So we are collaborating with those agencies to get those 2 years, 11-month-olds transitioned into preschool. So we have those families that are already in the system. system. So those are ones that have been working with physicians and providers in the private community. And then also we have new families that have preschoolers where they're saying, hey, we have a concern. A lot of times they have younger siblings that are kind of progressing faster than them. So they can come in, they can call, make an appointment. We have a screening where we can say, hey, they're on track, or hey, we have a concern, let's move forward with an evaluation. And then if they qualify, there's a variety of services that we provide for our 3, 4, and 5-year-olds prior to kindergarten.
So very early.
Yes. Early intervention is the key.
Yeah, you're talking about intervention and being proactive rather than reactive.
Correct.
That's so oftentimes a hard thing to get funding for because people want to respond to problems rather than head them off. So can you talk a little bit about the importance of identifying these things early and what that alleviates long term?
Well, definitely. I think that that is, you know, a nationwide conversation. And, you know, early intervention is key. And that's why we really want to support that funding for a lot of preschool services and across the board, really getting in there, both academically and behaviorally. So you were talking earlier, you know, we want to see those services reaching all families without any sort of discrimination. It's not, can you afford it or not? So we want to make sure that they get identified and seen earlier, because then that way we can get in there and provide those interventions and move them along and make progress.
And I also believe across the country, it's school districts are looking to collaborate with the medical community to work with the doctors and the physicians to say, hey, there are some of these concerns that doctors may see. And so for them to come to a social worker or a counselor to look at the developmental level of a child to see if it is appropriate, age appropriate, and then seeing the health perspective and then also the educational perspective and bringing those two worlds together is always a hope, at least for me, but I know for a lot of school districts, to collaborate with them.
How are the referrals made? You mentioned physicians and, pediatricians are really one of the best places to take your kid to identify any of these sort of learning problems or behavioral problems. And then I get a lot of referrals from pediatricians for mental health stuff because they've identified something that maybe the parents aren't that concerned with, or they're used to it. You know, sometimes if you're around something all the time, it's not all that alarming. So where are the youngsters coming from?
Well, definitely that Child Find Peace is a holistic community. So it is the physicians, it is the medical community, it's a lot of the private providers, speech and OT and PT, it's the moms groups, it's the daycares, it's the church Sunday school teachers,
okay.
You know, it's everyone in the community. And that's where I think we have flyers and information that we want to get out in the community to say, if you know of someone, if you know of a mom that lives next to you, that has a student that's really significant to the point where she stays at home because she can't go out in the community. You know, we want to get the information. We can't assume that everyone knows that those services are out there, especially for our 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. So we do have a lot of community agencies that are helping us get the word out there.
All right. I want to go to an email real quick right before the break. I'll just read it. Could you discuss how a child who is attaining A's and B's with attention, reading, and language challenges, ADD, and dyslexia, who requires hours of daily support outside of school to achieve the same degree as their peers, is eligible for and would benefit from a 504 per recent law changes by the Department of Civil Rights? Do you understand that question?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's where I think it goes back to it's a team decision. I do want to encourage families that when they feel like they are putting in hours and hours and hours after school to really have that conversation with the team. That way we have a holistic picture of what's happening. Definitely when we look at academically and behaviorally, sometimes they're not necessarily manifesting the same way at school as they are at home, or we might not see the level of support that goes in the home environment to keep those grades the way they are. And so I think when we're looking at, in regards to eligibility, that it's not only a diagnosis, but also how does that disability affect their access to the curriculum? And that differs for each kid. So there's not a blanket answer to that. And I would have to defer it back to the team to say, we want to engage in that conversation as to how we would move forward with that evaluation.
I also would question and see what the accommodations are on the 504 and what's happening outside of school, why things might be taking longer than typical. So maybe if those accommodations, you might have to start looking at maybe some modifications, which would lead into a special ed process. But if those accommodations are accurate, and so doing that constant follow-up with the team to see if those are appropriate. Another thing that I recommend to a lot of families is providing some type of reinforcement, because behaviorally speaking, that is what does shape behavior. So finding what is motivating to the student, and then using that and tying it into work completion.
All right, I do want to come back because I have another question about that. But right now we're at the halfway point in our show, so we're going to go ahead and take a short break. I want to remind folks you're listening to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. My guests today are the director and assistant director of early childhood and elementary special education for the Anchorage School District, Lori Ruckstachel and Allison Schmuckel. On today's program, we're discussing how the special education programs work and how to navigate the IEP process. You can reach us with your questions or comments at 550-8433 or call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can also email your questions to us at line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, joining me today are the director and assistant director of early childhood and elementary special education for the Anchorage School District, Lori Ruckstachel and Allison Schmuckel. On today's program, we are discussing how the special education programs work and how to navigate this process. As always, you can email your questions or comments about today's show to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433 or toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And please remember that the show repeats tonight at 8 p.m. So if you're listening to this on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we will not be able to accept phone calls, obviously. All right, before the break, we were talking a little bit about an email asking, I was a little bit confused, but my guests seemed to understand. The 504, the accommodation, it seems like the question that came up for me is, as a parent, if I'm putting, you know, a couple hundred dollars a week into tutors and all this, extra help outside of the school, and my kid is doing pretty well, but I don't want to keep spending that kind of money, haven't I sort of taken my kid out of being eligible? Like, do they have to fail before we can get them the appropriate services? Obviously, that's not the goal of anybody.
Right. We definitely don't want a wait to fail model.
Right.
You know, we definitely don't want to say, oh, they have to fall so far behind. So I think that's really where we want to be in close communication as to how much is needing to happen outside of the school day to maintain that level. And then really look at what sort of interventions do we need to do during the school day. I think a lot of times some of the question comes into which program are we using? And that's really where I think it becomes a conversation that we want to navigate with that team. We can't necessarily say that, oh, we're going to do the exact program that you're choosing to do at home, but here's something that can meet the need here at school. So it's a conversation that sometimes gets tricky, and that's where we want to engage in that with the family, and we want it to be collaborative, and that's where we have resources, whether it be the department chair or our support through the administration. I do want to give a shout out that we have another assistant director, Sean Bernard, who's not with us today because he's over at Russian Jack setting up our ESY summer program.
And what's the ESY?
Extended school year.
Okay.
And so it's the summer program for special education, and it starts tomorrow for our students that have qualified. And so Sean is the on-site administrator and over there with all of our staff members getting everything set up.
All right. Another email along the same lines, and maybe you can't speak to this yet because maybe the school district hasn't quite gotten there, but how will ASD accommodate or address the recent Supreme Court ruling on providing students with disabilities? And this is I haven't heard this term, meaningful, appropriately ambitious progress.
Well, I think it's definitely going through and identifying what is that meaningful appropriate. And so, you know, there's definitely some, you know, interpretation around that. We want it to be, you know, high expectations and meaningful and appropriate. And I think that's where sometimes, you know, we kind of have a misunderstanding is what is the family's interpretation of that and the school district's. And so we all know that it's about expectations. And so we want to help clarify that conversation with everyone involved so that not one individual as a part of the team feels like their expectations aren't being met.
This is an incredibly emotional piece for parents, because we all as parents want our kids to be successful academically, socially. I imagine you get a lot. I've heard in my office as a therapist a lot of upset and angry parents complaining about getting sort of pushed aside or not listened to. And what's the best way for a parent to really be heard? I know it's not to go and you know, scream at people and get angry, and that I just tell parents that makes people not take you very seriously. And but it is emotional and it is intense. How do you guys deal with that piece from parents and balancing it with what the school has to do in this process?
It is emotional and it is intense, and we want to help navigate that. So a lot of times when I'm talking with families or we're preparing for a meeting, it really is to say, how can we bullet point? How can we outline exactly what your expectations are so that we can quantify that, or that we can respond to your concern in a very targeted way? And so I know that's our goal when we get involved, is to say, how can we address your concern and come up with action items that are going to meet your need, that are going to help you feel like your concerns are being addressed? It might not be the answer you were looking for. But that's where we want to say, we might not be able to do that, but we can do this, and here's how we can do it. And so that's how we navigate that conversation.
So hearing people, I would imagine, I know for me, it was very reassuring to have a group of, you know, a principal and a teacher and the special ed person in the room with us listening to our concerns and saying, we can do this, this, and this, and then we'll measure and we'll look at this again in a couple of months. That was helpful.
Correct. And I think outlining that action plan and knowing this is where we are, this is where we're going to go.
Who's going to do what?
Who's going to do what? Here's the time frame. And that's really where we want to encourage that we are a large school district, but we want to answer your questions. We want to meet your needs in a meaningful way. And we want to outline that timeline and say, you know, here's how we're going to get there.
And one thing that Lori and Sean and I discussed that we've been talking about lately, too, is how to go about with the follow-up piece when we're collaborating and supporting the school buildings, and then also having open communication and setting up a venue for parents to come in with concerns so they feel comfortable coming in and speaking with us, even if they don't know what they should be asking, but they're just unsure about any part of the process. And so I think we're doing a good job, and this is one way, too, is putting more information out there so to inform families, and then also say, be in touch with us, contact us, and we would love to sit down and speak further.
All right. Again, back to hearing people and listening and saying, you know, we care and we're going to do some stuff to help. All right. If you're just joining us, my guests today are the director and assistant director of early childhood and elementary special education for the Anchorage School District, Lori Ruckstashel and Allison Schmuckel. On today's program, we are discussing how the special education programs work and how to navigate the IEP process. You can call us with your questions or comments at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. If you do have a question that you'd like to call in with, please don't wait until the last 5 minutes because we won't be able to do that. So call in, say, in the next 10 minutes and we'll get you on the air. In the meantime, I have an email I'd like to read. My granddaughter was screened by the early intervention program. Fantastic people working there at the ASD office. So there's a little plug for you guys. And then went to Nanaka Valley preschool program. This was more behaviorally related than developmental, mostly due to some recent upheaval in her life. She did great. Really loved the program. Shout out to Miss Mack and Miss D, who she adores, and is going on to kindergarten next year. We're very proud of her and greatly appreciate all of the hard work of everyone involved. There's a lot of paperwork. The process was relatively simple, and everyone involved was extremely helpful. Keep up the good work.
Wow, thanks for the feedback.
I know. Usually, I mean, there's so much of this stuff that, you know, is you always hear the dissatisfied folks. So it really is nice to hear people, you know, to come in with a positive. So sounds like you guys are doing some good work. And her experience sounds like it worked the way it was supposed to.
Mm-hmm. And that's our hope. And our goal is to move through the process seamlessly. But as we know, sometimes it doesn't always go as smoothly. And that's where we want to kind of navigate those road bumps so that we can move on and get where we need to be. But thanks for sharing that positive feedback. I know the team at NUNACA will appreciate that, and at our EISC evaluative team.
How does a kid then qualify for IEP versus 504? We've gone through the interventions, we've gone through the 504, and now what qualifies a kid for IEP? Because I got a bunch of teenagers that are having a hard time getting in, and I encourage parents, if they have a concern, do it early, because at 14, 15, if a kid is doing other things like smoking weed and running and not, you know, behavioral problems have often are triggered because kids don't feel good in school. But what's the next level for getting to an IEP versus a 504?
So definitely when we're talking about the link on your website, if you link to the Anchorage School District and you go to the special education homepage, you can kind of click through some of the eligibility criteria. And also you can look at the state's outline of all of the different eligibility categories. So when you're looking at the evaluation process, so if a team has identified that there is a suspicion that there's a disability, and we've tried those interventions, or we feel like it's not working, or it's working and we're going to need to maintain that level of support for a more extended amount of time. So then we go through that assessment. So the team at the school, including the parents, go through the evaluation process and then determine through the eligibility report, does the student qualify or not qualify? And if they don't qualify, then we talk about, okay, what are some options that we can do? But then if they qualify and they're entered into special education, then you move into writing the IEP and that team process to say, okay, how are we going to meet this need? Where are they currently? Looking at the current level of performance, where do we want them to be, and how are we going to get there? So that's where you can see it takes a lot of understanding and consensus along the way around eligibility, around qualification, and then into the IEP about, okay, how are we going to meet that need, and what is that going to look like in the school environment? So when we're looking at the continuum of supports, then you're coming to agreement on, okay, what are we going to do, and how is that going to look in the school? And so again, I go back to, we have a continuum of supports at the preschool level. Like the previous email stated, we have a variety of supports, even from, we have teachers that go into private preschool, communication classrooms, structured learning, five-day developmental. We have a variety of services at preschool, and then we also have a variety of services at the elementary level. And that's where we really have to outline that IEP. What is our plan, and how are we going to move forward?
And through that whole process, we're aligning with general ed curriculum and wanting special ed students to still be working alongside with their peers. Lori and I just came from a meeting with special ed staff and that principal, and she made it very clear to them that even though they're for a specialized program, they're still part of that community, part of that school, and we were talking through different parts of the day and how those students with an IEP will still be working alongside their peers as much as they are able to.
Brings an interesting point up for me, because I deal with a lot of the kids who talk about being pulled out of their classes or getting the special stuff, and then they feel different than their peers. So how is that navigated and minimized by the adults to sort of protect kids from feeling like, to use lack of a better term, you know, like we're on the short bus? Like, I mean, that really is that stigma that gets associated with it is really hard for kids to handle and to deal with socially.
Well, I definitely think that we as a district are really ramping up our conversation around, however you want to say, mainstreaming,
yes,
inclusion, co-teaching, differentiation. You know, we definitely don't want the first go-to to be, oh, we're just going to pull them out.
Right.
We want to talk about how can we accommodate and modify and differentiate that general curriculum in the general education classroom, because we have such skilled and amazing general education teachers that so many times, if they're given those resources, they can really help meet the needs of students in the classroom. So it doesn't even necessarily mean that it has to be pulled out and provided by a special educator. And so we as a district really are working on those inclusive practices and really looking at how are we both academically and behaviorally providing instruction alongside general education and, you know, doing the best we can to meet their needs. But not all students progress with that. And so if we can show that they're, I mean, if we see that they're not progressing, then we might say, okay, now we need to move to the next level, because that's not their least restrictive environment. And just being in the classroom, maybe with an adult in the back of the room, isn't necessarily inclusion. So we really want to be sensitive and cautious around making sure that we define what is their least restrictive environment.
Yeah, because mainstreaming important to the school district, keeping kids in classrooms with the general population?
Yes, and I think maybe using the terminology inclusive practices, really as a whole, communicating as a community that we are inclusive of all and that we want to differentiate both in intervention but also acceleration. So there might be students that need accelerated curriculum, and so the district is really saying, okay, how can we push them farther and at the same time afford those students that might need interventions all in the way that we schedule and utilize our staff in the building.
How can parents be supportive of the school district? How can we as, advocators for children best help you guys do your job of helping our kids learn and be educated and have a successful academic career?
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, it's like, what do parents do well, and what, like?
Well, I definitely think that, you know, parents instilling that, you know, importance of priority of education.
Okay.
Getting them access early, you know, exposing them to literature early. But I think really it is keeping that open communication. We cannot assume that someone along the way is going to know what you're thinking. And so if you are concerned, there is nothing wrong in asking questions or saying, I don't even know what questions to ask. And that's mm-hmm. a lot of the conversations that we want to have with our department chairs, with our special education teachers, with our administrators in the school, with our general education teachers is that if you're getting the sense from families that something is unsettled and they just don't know what questions to ask, then you need to show them the way and say, hey, you know, I see that you have some concerns. Let me walk you through the process that we have for you. And so that's where we want to make sure that all families feel like they know the process and how to access it. And if you don't, we want to help you be advocates and help you navigate that system.
I think the biggest piece is the communication and having families come in, even if they don't know what to ask, like Gloria is saying, and just say, I'm frustrated or I'm unsure of this. Can you give me more information? We're looking at providing parent nights so that we can get out more information to family, either in person or through social media. So I think the open communication and also just the trusting piece. I mean, we're in this for the kids. Our business
right.
is children. We have a passion for it. And so trusting us through that process, knowing that families are as much part of the team just as all the teachers and the administrators.
Okay, I got a funding question on an email. So what 504 supports might be available at the middle school level with the recent significant cutbacks to middle school staff? How is the financial situation? I know mm-hmm. people want to cut intervention stuff. They want to cut all the, you know, the special programs when budgets get tight. But how is that impacting what's right. available?
Well, of course, you know, as everybody is, I mean, we're experiencing, you know, all of the setbacks. But I will say that, you know, we are still held responsible for meeting the needs of the students. So when you look at 504, you know, the law is just as binding with 504 as it is with an IEP. But funding and resources come with an IEP that don't necessarily come with a 504. And so, but when you're looking at implementing that, you know, we still are held responsible for meeting the needs of students. And so we might need to be thinking outside of the box or working with teams on how we might rethink the way we do support, maybe from our office. But ultimately, we are still meeting the needs of kids as we navigate the budget conversation.
So you're held to account regardless of whether you have the resources available to do the job or not, sort of like the fire department, the police department.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we want to cut officers and increase public safety. So we want to cut funding for schools and at the same time continue to meet. You're still held to task for that.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. All right. That seems kind of complicated. And that's maybe where parents come in. And, you know, I think for us, and sometimes we've done well with Ryland, and sometimes we as parents haven't done so well, but really following up on doing some extra work at home and setting up the structure where she gets extra reading time because reading was the challenge, and maybe getting a, you know, what about peer tutors or things like that? I mean, there are other things that creativity wise, having other students teach students or older kids coming in. I mean, what are you guys, how are you going to meet those needs with the slash in funding?
Well, and I definitely think I want to clearly communicate that we have not reduced our workforce necessarily in the special education department. And so, you know, I don't want to give that misconception. I know that, you know, the conversation is valid in our state. It's valid federally. You know, there are grant programs that are being you know, cut. And so I think we're feeling it across the board. And that's where I think not only do we want to talk about how we provide those, you know, collaborative wraparound supports, but then also how are we communicating the importance of education in our state and also federally. And so I think that's where we want to maintain that conversation of importance across the board.
Behavioral IEPs. Behavior problems are tough. It's tough to keep some of those kids in the classes. What are some things that parents who have kids with severe behavior problems, how are you guys addressing that?
Well, I definitely think when you opened up the conversation today and you were saying kind of struggling and what that looks like socially, you know, it's very hard to navigate that conversation as a family and a team. But we do have resources, and general education, the Anchorage School District is holistically looking at that in our interventions across the board for social emotional learning and for addressing that holistic piece. And again, when we talk about what's happening across general education, what sort of interventions are happening for those behavioral, social, emotional replacement skills, and then how we move through the special education evaluation process and identifying if they do qualify that on an IEP, how are we going to meet their needs? And kind of like what Allison was saying, I mean, her role is very unique with one particular program, but this year in and of itself, we've been having the conversation about what does that look like in our neighborhood schools for addressing the social emotional piece and the intensity, and it's valid. And we're very excited about where we're going with the district.
I have been noticing a great deal of conversations at the schools about social emotional learning in a lot of programs. Mm-hmm. That are really addressing those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. All right, couple of take-home points, or just one from each of you. You want to start? We're at the end of our show, so.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us on today.
Yeah.
I think the community forum is important, and we don't want to work against. We want to work with families to meet the needs of all students. And so we're excited about moving that forward.
All right.
Lori and I must be talking a lot lately, because I was going to say the collaboration piece between school and families is huge. And we are in this business, like I said, for the kids. And I know the parents want the best for their kids. They are the first advocate for their child. And so communicating, collaborating, coming together, because I think the district is moving forward with some really great things in addition to the academics, but the social piece as well.
Takes a village, right? All right. Appreciate you guys joining me today. Thanks a lot. Please remember to check out the variety of links and information we have available on today's topic. Just go to alaskapublic.org and click on the link to today's show. Breast cancer is the result of both genetic and environmental factors. On the next program, Dr. Woodard hosts a discussion on chemicals in our environment and the origins of breast cancer. That's next Monday, June 19th at 2 p.m., repeating that same evening at 8 p.m. on FM 91.1 Alaska Public Media. Eric Bork handled our web editing for today's program, and Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. As always, we appreciate you for taking the time to join us today on Line 1. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a good day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.